thank you. My name is Jeff. I'm an addict.
Hi, Jeff.
For anyone who might be interested, I also drank a lot, so I consider myself an alky. And any addict who doesn't is fooling himself. If you're new, welcome. You're in the right place. I've been coming to meetings for 33 years, and I'm 31 years clean. I'll be 32 next January. And it's been a very, very interesting journey. You probably all think I came in here as a baby. Well, I can assure you I'm 70 years old now. So recovery has been good. I've had to put a lot into it. It doesn't come easy. There's a lot of fun to be had in recovery, and there's a lot of pain to face in recovery. I grew up in London, in Battersea. My dad was my hero. He was a complete alky, my dad. He was an engineer, he travelled the world. My mum was his manageability. But I loved him, I adored my dad. He would come in, he would appear in the 50s in a trilby and a cashmere overcoat with a suitcase stamped all over the world, you know, all those things. And I just loved him. He was a womanizer, a drunk, everything I became myself. I've been married 4 times. And I probably will get married a fifth. Because why give up on something? And anyway, he was my hero. And he died when I was in early recovery. And I think about him now with great love. At the time, I was sort of angry with him. But now I think about my dad and I just loved him. Loved him to pieces. And my old mum. My mum was the great enabler in the family. She had lots of money. And she enabled us. She kept my addiction going for years. If I needed money, I just called her and she gave it to me. When I had lots of gear, because I got into smuggling, eventually I would take it all to my mother's house and she would sit and help me bag it up. Way up. I would cut it all up, and I'm talking, you know, like ounces, and she would just chop it all up and mix it for me. And she just enabled me to, you know. And when I came into recovery, first of all, she liked it. She didn't, I got arrested. I mean, the judge sent me to prison, obviously. And she used to come and see me in prison. She'd come all dressed up, you know, mum, please, you know. And she was really happy. And I said, why the fuck? I've been told not to swear. Why are you so happy? And she goes, I know where you are, and I know you're all right. Oh, great. Great. Maybe we could change seats here. But that's the way, you know, my mother felt about it. And that was the family situation. I've still got 4 brothers. None of them used. They drank a bit. So it's very odd. But, you know, my granddad was on my mother's side, drank, and they were mad gamblers. And I think once you're an addict, that's it, you've got it. We've got it all, you know. Sex addiction. The only thing I don't is I never gamble because I couldn't stand the idea of bookmakers having my money. Mm. You know, you can get stoned and passed out. You know, you go in a betting shop, you cannot leave until you've... I've seen people do it and it's not for me. Anyway, I went to AA when I was in prison in 81. And when they were releasing me in late 82, they said to me, there's a fellowship called Narcotics Anonymous, you should go to it, you're an addict, you know. And I didn't take, I didn't take much notice, but I went to my first meeting in 83, and then, you know, I got a bit of clean time and I would use again. I'd get another bit of time and I'd use. The maximum I got was 15 months, and I used again. I had this most beautiful girlfriend in recovery. She was a model. She was stunning, and they found her dead one day. And that's what addiction does. That's what drug addiction does, alcoholism. People die. It'd be very, if they didn't, we wouldn't be here. There'd be no fellowship. And that is the sadness of it. Yeah. And I take my recovery. And what it happened was, I thought, why do these people, why can they get clean and I can't? What is it that's wrong with me that they haven't? And I thought about this. And I thought, I'm going to try and pray. Because I heard these people talking about they get on their knees and they pray. And I thought, well, it's not for me. Because the one thing I didn't want to do coming to recovery is land up some religious freak. And in fact, that hasn't happened. Nothing has happened since I came into recovery. I've got myself in all sorts of problems. My sponsor said to me, Jeff, you can do what you like in recovery, exactly what you want, but you must be able to pay the bill when it's called. If you can't, you'll relapse every time. You'll slip, you'll go. And he used to be an old guy in AA, a little Irish fella, years sober. And he used to say, under every skirt, there's a slip. And I used to think, what the is he on about? And in fact, all my slipping in early recovery was all around women. Because I thought, if I've given up the drugs, I've given up the drink, I've lost all my money, I'm certainly not going to stop shagging. And it got me into trouble every time. Bang, bang. More trouble, more trouble, more trouble. So I thought, I'll give that a miss. And anyway, I decided one night, I'd had a years at the weekend. It was January, I know the exact dates. It was a weekend in January in 1986. And on the Monday, I thought, I got on my knees. I got on my knees and I said, whoever is there, whatever this is about, can you keep me clean and sober? Please, can you help me? And from that day to this, I have not picked up. I have not picked up because I thought, I had to start believing. I had to start believing that everything would be all right. I'd lost everything. I had a great success in the 70s with a business. I had a shop on the King's Road. I had money, I had cars, I had the lot. And I spunked the lot. It went. One just went. And and I had this sponsor in recovery and I wasn't doing anything. And someone offered me a job gardening. I've never been a gardener in my life. You know, I did cut the grass while I was in prison. if you could call that gardening. Anyway, I was offered a job gardening and someone said, you can do it, yeah? You're bright enough, you can do it. Anyway, I did it and I became a gardener. But on the way to becoming a gardener, I had a sponsor and I said, Peter, you know, I've got no money. He had a big Merc, lots of money. I thought he might give me a few quid. I said, I've got no car, I can't. He said, Jeff, have you got four limbs? I said, well, yeah. He said, why don't you get a bike and ride that? I said, but I'll have tools. He said, strap them on the bike. And I tell you what, it was quite, you know, I thought, he's really got the wrong person here. But, you know, I decided I would listen to him, and I decided I would do it. And I started doing it, and it worked. And it worked. And before long, things were happening. I was employing people, things were happening. And everything changed. Everything changed. I went from nothing to having the most beautiful big house, all paid for, cars, until I divorced the old lady. I landed up with the dog. She got the house, I got the dog, and I've still got him. He's in the car down at South Kent. I left him in the car. See, my behaviour in recovery cost me dearly. It cost me everything that I'd put together. I've got two or three children. I lost a boy 2 years ago. I got married very young, so I've got three children by three. Now, I had four children, but my boy, who was 49, died from drug addiction last year. And I hadn't seen him for years. But his sister, my eldest girl, she calls herself number one when she writes to me, is number one here. And she's 51, she writes to me. And I write back. I haven't seen her, but she texts us for England. You know, if I send her hi, I get back a text. But anyway, I lost this boy. And then I've got a girl from a woman I had a relationship with in recovery who's now dead. She died some years ago. I've got a daughter with her. And then I've got my boy from my last marriage who I absolutely adore, this boy. And I spoil him. I bought him a really beautiful car recently. I shouldn't have done it, but I couldn't help it. He passed his test, 17. He's going to be he's just started uni he's going to do music production. And he tells me how he's famous he's going to be and how he's going to, have this and do that. And I believe he will do it. I believe that's what he wants, his focus. And I told him recently, because he said to me, Dad, these people, I see my sponsor, we meet, he knows my sponsor. He said, you talk about meetings, you talk about, what is it about, Dad? He said, I asked Mum. And Mum said, ask your dad. So he said to me, Dad, what's this about? And I said, Joe, I will tell you. I was an addict and an alky. I've been clean and sober this length of time. And this is what it's all about. And that's why I know all these people. And he just went, oh, Dad, that's cool. So I said to him, if you ever have a problem with drink or drugs, all you have to do is talk to me. I won't bark, you just talk to me. Until that time comes, just carry on with your life. He's having a good time, carry on with your life. He doesn't drink, he said he can't stand the taste of booze. What happens to him? He's just coming up 18, what will happen? That will happen, you know. I can't control him, I can't hold on, I can't, you know, I can't do this stuff. He must find his own way in life, like I found my own way. And I've done a lot of meetings through the years. I still do about, I divorced 4 years ago, come this January, and I crash myself into meetings, because up until then I've been doing a sort of meeting a week for years, and my life went pear-shaped. And as it went pear-shaped, I got cancer right at the same time, about 3 weeks after we separated. They found I had cancer, and they said, we've got to operate immediately, there's a tumor, we've got to go. And I thought, I thought it's over, but I didn't go sharing it in meetings, because what's the point? I contained it with myself and my sponsor and a few close friends. because no one can do anything. They can talk about you. They can say, you know, Jeff for the high jump and all that sort of nonsense. I think my ex was a bit upset when she found out I had cancer because we had just done this big financial settlement. And I think she thought if it had been a few months later, she might have got off really light. But anyway, I went for the operation. And she said to me, "My God, stand up, you're really fit. And what age are you?" And she had the paper like that. She said, "We've got to do this immediately." I said, "Look, hold on a minute. I've got to take my son on holiday next week. I can't do it next week." She said, "Well, as soon as you come back, call us and you can come in." And they did it. And the operation was very straightforward, done and dusted. And I had the all clear a year afterwards. I'm having another 3-year check next month. So just for today, I'm all right. Just for today, I'm not ill. I could moan about aches and pains. I've got this disease in my hands, my fingers twist, and I've had operations on them and stuff. I could moan about it, but what's the point? What is the point? Now, all I really wanted in life was happiness. That's why I took drugs, loads of them. I wanted to feel really good. And I did for a time. I did. I enjoyed a lot of my gallivanting and using life. But then it stopped working, like I'm sure it did for a lot of you. That feeling stops. That, you know, I couldn't quite feel like that again, no matter how much. So what is happiness? It's not what I've got. It's not about who I am. It's about how I think. That's what happiness is, as far as I'm concerned. How do I think today? Do I think you're a shit? Do I think, or him next door, anyone, doesn't matter. Ian, we're pointing at Ian here too. But do you know, it's about my head. It's about what my head is going on in my head. Some nights, you know, I've gone to bed. I've gone to sleep. I live on my own, which is, you know, it's quite fabulous, really. It is really fabulous. But I've got a partner who she lives in Rome. So I go every 2 months, which is even better. And she's wonderful, she's beautiful, she's Filipino, and we just get on really well. But I go every couple of months and it's lovely. So for 58 days, I've got myself and the dog and do what I like. But sometimes I put my head on the pillow, go to sleep. What happens sometimes? I wake up and it's all fucked. What happened? I was in great shape when I went to bed last night. Now I'm a bit sensitive. I've always been sensitive. I'm a Piscean, so I've always been sensitive. I write. I'm a poet. I write. And I do lots of writing. If I feel really lonely and sad, I'll write about it. I just write about how I'm feeling at the time. You know, I loved the chair, the Amish chair, which I thought was really fabulous.
Hayley.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. See, I get everything wrong. I've probably blushed as well. I've lost track now. What I was going to say. Oh yeah, what happens from feeling great, go to sleep and then wake up and I feel less than, not good enough. You know, if I let this stuff go on in my head, you've got more than me. You've got, you know, he's got that. You know, and it just, I've had it. If I let that happen. So I decide what I've got today is all right. I am all right as Jeff, as a guy. I can get up, I still work. If I get up, I'm out of that bed. If for one moment I feel negative, I'm just out. Because once I'm outside into the air, into the street, it's completely different than if I try and lay in bed and pull that duvet up and think everything would be, and my head just goes, it just goes on. Because that addict lives in me. He's still living nicely in me. It's cozy. It knows me really well. When I was a boy, I used to wet the bed. I used to wet the bed all the time. My brothers would fucking shame me at breakfast time. Oh, Mum, he's done it again. He's done it again. Oh, no. You know, I try and I could. There's no way I could cover it. There was no way. And I don't know why I'm saying this. As a young guy, my mum would say, there's a party. There's a birthday party. And I'd go around and I'd look through the letterbox. If there was more than one kid there, I would take off to the park. Because I didn't feel good enough going into a room. And I can still feel nervous going into a party or a lunch thing or something with people. I feel comfortable here because we're all addicts. But if you say to me, Jeff, I was with a client, a very grand client of mine one day, and we're at this place and they were all lords, ladies and judges. I said, I feel really, she said, Jeff, you're fine. Just go in there and talk to them. I went, yeah, but you don't understand. You don't understand what goes on here. She said, Jeff, you'll be fine. Just go in. Take a breath and go, and then I'm all right. Then I can go. But it's hard. That getting over that bit for me as an addict has been really, really difficult. And it still can be. You know, I love my own company. I love being. But I have to. I was talking to Ian. Loneliness can be really horrible. I've had some terrible, terrible lonely times in my life. And it can be awful when you're sitting on your own and you think everybody else is all right. The phone doesn't ring. Nobody wants me. You know, I can sit there. I'm spiraling down. Down I go. And I have to just get myself, pick myself up, and I start writing. Because my phone doesn't ring. It rings a lot during the day because people are looking for me or they want. But of a night, it doesn't ring. And sometimes I think, I should just get a woman, just take her home. Then I think, I've got to deal with the morning then. I've got to deal with I don't feel too good about it. Or my partner might ring me. And I couldn't stand to lie to her. I couldn't stand. I lied. I've been in relationships. I lied all my life. When it came on top with my separation, I just couldn't lie anymore. And it was nothing bad. It was nothing, nobody, I wasn't caught in somebody's bed or didn't. There was a message on my phone. They're deadly mobile phones, as we all know. There was a message. I left it on downstairs. And there was a message, battery low, we'll call tomorrow. And she went, Jeff, what is this? She said, I remember this person writing to you a year ago. Saying, what is this? Now, I could have lied. I could have pulled myself together, lied, and carried on in the relationship because I kept thinking what I had. And I said, no, the game's up. This is what's going on. This is how I feel. This is what it's about. Bang, done and dusted on the spot. And I walked away. I remember walking down the road crying. Thinking, what the fuck have you done? You could have lied. But if I kept on lying, I wouldn't get anywhere. Because there was a barrier that I've kept running up to in my life, around women and around stuff. I can't get over, I have to get over this barrier. I've got to find out what's in front. Not once did I think about using or drinking. I thought I should kill myself. That was what I thought. I'll kill myself, be done with it. I won't use, because they'll go, you know that Jeff used. We told you he would one day. We've been waiting. We've been waiting. No, no, I wasn't going to give him that pleasure. I'll kill myself. Then I kept thinking, how will I look in the box? If I kill myself, how am I going to kill myself? No, no, we give that a miss. And I just suffered the pain that I got myself in. I didn't pick up. I cried unbelievably in meetings. I cried for the love I had for my boy, and I wouldn't be going home. I cried so much. My little dog, I've got a little schnauzer, Giles. He's very sweet. Comes every day and he goes, sweet, of a morning. I cried so much, he put his paw over his eyes like that. He couldn't stand any more of it. Dad, I've had enough. Stop the crying. And I thought, this dog is right. I've got to stop crying. As my mum used to say, pull your socks up, son, and get on with life. You've made your bed, now you best lie in it. So I started doing lots and lots and lots of meetings. Lots of meetings. Sharing about how I was feeling, sharing about where I got to. I'm sorry I've jumped a bit here, but when I came out of the operation, as I came to, the nurse passed me a pump. And she said, pump this, you'll be fine. And I was totally off my fucking head anyway. And I pumped it once. Or I dragged it, I pulled everything out as I came back too, because I thought they'd cut my arms off and my legs. I just pulled all the cables and wires out of me. And I stayed in pain for 2 weeks. I didn't take any medication. Now, some people call me a fool, but I know how much of an addict I am. I know I just didn't want it. Pain won't kill you. Drugs will. Pain won't kill you. I had a little list here. I had some points. life and recovery. I believe truly the best is yet to come. Now, most people say he's a fool. He's 70 years old. I believe the best is yet to come. I've got plans. I've got a whole plan. I've just bought a very, very big piece of land in Asia. And I'm going to build and I'm going to change my life around in a couple of years. I've got all sorts of plans. And I'm excited. And I keep thinking, well, I hope I stay well enough. I can't leave it too long because I might keel over. But I do believe I'll live to be 85. I do believe I've got a decent 10 years left in me yet. And I want to do something. I want to help some children. I want to do something. I want to change a lot of things. And I believe I can do it. I believe I can do it by staying clean. Everything I've got, every thought that I have, positive thought, is because I've stayed clean. I've got 11,000, 12,000 days of clean time and I treasure them. I treasure, you know, people I've met in recovery, people, you know, it's just lovely that we can all get clean. And you can lose it just by picking up like that. See, I couldn't work out. Well, I was once in a meeting, and when I came in, there was only a few meetings. It was down in Chelsea, and they were saying, I went to the meeting late, and I was with this beautiful little Jewish princess. as we went up the stairs, she said to me, "Oh, they're saying a serenity prayer." And I went, "Oh, they're just so religious." I went off and used.
No.
It's all I needed to use. It's all I needed was to have someone with me who wasn't really well. I was as sick as a pig. Off we went. Now, tomorrow, every week I go to church. The oratory. I'm not religious. So I'm not religious. But I believe there is something greater than me. And when I go to church, I go there to sit really. I go for the calmness, the quietness. I light a candle from people I've lost, my children, and where I'm going. Because by centering myself, by stopping, I get some bearing of what I'm about. Even if it's momentary, I know what's going on. I actually love recovery. I cherish recovery. And my sponsor said to me, I was about 2 years clean, and I started to get panic attacks, really bad panic attacks. And I was working one day, and I rushed, there were no mobile phones then, I rushed to phone box, and I called my sponsor. And I said, "Peter, I'll fucking stay." I was sweating, I was shaking, and I couldn't move, I was paralyzed. And he said, "Jeff, you know what it is with you, don't you?" Again, I said, "Yeah, what?" He said, "You have never worked the third step. You balk at the third step. You will not have faith that it's gonna be all right. You still get in there and go yourself, try and manipulate, try and work it out." He said, "Just let things go, just let it go." He said, "Leap." I said, "Fucking leap where?" He said, "Jeff, have faith, it'll be all right. It'll be all right." And I did, you know, and the panic attack stopped. I've never had another one, really, because I believe I worked the third step, everything's all right. And he took me through the steps and he said, "When you get to the 12th step, Jeff, I'm going to tell you something." I thought, I knew there was something about this program. There's a key. There's a key. There's something on this 12 step lock. And we got to the 12th step. I was so excited. It took us 3 years. It took him 3 years to take me through the step. We got there and we finished the 12th step, and I'm going to finish on this. And I went, "Yeah, Peter." I was so excited. He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, what is it then? What is it? Come on." He said, "You can carry the message now." I went, "What?" He said, "You can carry the message. That is all it is about. You get yourself well enough, as well as you can be, to carry the message of recovery to other suffering alcoholics or addicts." It's that simple. Thanks very much. Thank you. Yeah.